Good evening, everybody. This is Coach Coop here with another episode of BHB Radio. Tonight, I am joined by professional swimmer and Olympic hopeful Michael Andrew. Michael is actually here to give us a bit of a peek behind the curtain as he guns for a spot in the very next Olympics. He's going to give us key insights into his own health, nutrition, and training regimen. If you're an athlete, this is a no-brainer. You're going to pick up a ton of gems that you could introduce into your own routine. If you're an everyday person listening, there's actually a ton for you here too, whether it comes to fueling your active lifestyle, ways to train, or even your own in-gym performance. There's a ton of nuggets here. I'm looking forward to introducing you guys to Michael and finding out what he's been up to. Without further ado, let's get this show on the road. Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt, and you are listening to Better Health and Body Radio, your source for the latest and greatest information and understanding in the world of health, nutrition, and performance, where we give you a seat at the table next to the best and the brightest minds to arm you with the information you need to optimize yourself. Join us for another exciting, thought-provoking episode of BHB Radio, starting now. Hey, Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously I know who you are, but for people at home listening, can you tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, 100%. So I've been swimming professionally since I was 14. So I signed to go pro when I was 14. I really fell in love with the sport at a young age and kind of went along this massive journey as a family. And we've been very known in the swimming world to do things, I'd say, against the grain, against the current. We kind of swim upstream, so to speak. And whether it's the way we train, our fueling, whatever, we've always done things differently. We've had some pretty amazing results up to this point. And So I'm 21 now. I feel like my career, I've lived an entire like professional career. It's been so many years now, but we're still just at the beginning, which is exciting. So we've learned a lot and feel very blessed to be where we are. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, I'm just a professional swimmer that loves to do things differently.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's great to hear. And then you're also getting prepped for a pretty big competition that people might have heard of, right?
Yeah. If you live on planet Earth, you've probably heard of the competition. Right now, 2021, well, typically it wouldn't have been 2021. It would have been 2020. But we are in preparation very hard right now for the Olympic Games. And everything looks like it's on track, which is pretty exciting. It's nice to know that things are being put in place to make it viable. And, you know, it's one of those things you train for all your life. And as much as it doesn't define you, it's a very big part of your career. And I'm pretty excited to really shoot for my first Olympic debut and really continue this journey as a pro swimmer.
Well, that's awesome, man. What got you into swimming in the beginning?
Yeah, so when I was, well, I guess kind of with my parents. My parents are always very athletic. Mom was a gladiator. My dad dove in South Africa on their like naval base, or not the naval, but like their Navy. And he swam, played rugby. So very athletic genes. And when we were living in the US, when we moved to the States, I was always athletic and kind of running around. I played a lot of football, a lot of soccer. And my mom actually thought I would be in some sort of ball sport because I was always jumping the trampoline, throwing and kicking stuff. And one of our neighbor actually introduced us to the local swim team. And I think it was more because I was maybe being irritating or leaving footballs and soccer balls in the field all the time. And so they're like, well, this kid has way too much energy. Let's like get him in the pool. And I was 8, I believe, at the time. Got into the swimming kind of scene, fell in love with the water, really quickly progressed. And then, you know, the rest is history. By the time I was 10, I was breaking national records and started gaining recognition. And then we started to, well, my parents really saw a gift and a talent and were like, hey, let's cultivate this. Let's do something crazy. And and just see how much of a gift God has given Michael to swim. And it's been a pretty cool ride so far. But that's kind of where it started. It's about 8 years old. We were living in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And thanks to our neighbors for pushing us into swimming.
Oh, that's awesome. And who knows, maybe, you know, sometimes you'll take someone who isn't tremendous athlete in one sport and they're good in other things, like, you know, Russell Wilson, I believe, could have played in the MLB, or LeBron probably could have played in the NFL, for example.
Right. No, I 100% agree. I think there's something that you see in a lot of the elite athletes in the world, and it's even less of a like a capability, but it's like a mental determination, where it's like whenever they put their mind to something, whether it's a sport or a business or something, they're going to have success. They find the ways, they research, they study, and they sacrifice and work towards their goals, which is what we've done. And it's been pretty exciting to see. But yeah, that's, I often wonder that too. It's like, maybe had I lived here in Southern California, maybe I'd be a pro surfer or some right. other sport. Like, who knows?
Totally. Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. I think, I mean, a couple things, like for me, that's, you know, I stopped playing sports at a young-ish age. And now it's like I work in my own practice. Obviously, I do this show, which is like getting the greater health, performance, right. wellness messages out there. And then in my own practice, I work with, you know, pro athletes all the way to people in neurodegeneration. And it's like I'm semi-healthily obsessed with it, I would say. So
right. Well, it's like I'm awesome.
Yeah, it's like I get to channel that, what you just said about refining your craft and as an athlete, just in a different phase of my life, right? Almost like Kobe right. after he had stopped playing, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Well, and that's the thing, is you have a purpose beyond just your craft. It's like you are excited about the breakthroughs and the things you learn, and then you want to share that with people so that they can have breakthroughs. And it's kind of that cycle that's ongoing. Right. I see that a lot in my career.
Yeah, I would imagine for sure. And you guys are trailblazers in your own right now, in your own right there. And we'll get to that in a moment here. Yeah, I think also the idea of you being sort of a general athlete and doing other activities too, even if it's just playing, is important, because a lot of the times you'll see these athletes specialize in one sport without getting in other types of activity, especially in a sport like basketball. Or right. like girls soccer, and then there's like an injury epidemic by the time these athletes get to college.
Definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of fear around it too. And that's the thing too, is, you know, even with sport, what I've come to notice, and this is kind of one of my life things in general, something I've learned from a young age, is to make it in the world of sport, you have to live with a performance-based identity. You know, like a company, they don't want to work with someone that's not winning. And so you find yourself wanting to, you know, you have to be safe and careful, and you can't do too many things. You want to make sure you're not injured and stuff like that. But I do remember, like, when I was younger, yeah, I just did everything. It's like, you can't really live with that fear. But yeah, sorry, that was a rabbit trail.
No, it definitely is relevant. And I think people at home, what they can take away from that is that even if you are really in love with one thing, whether it's something like swimming or something like strength training, you know, whether it's doing new movement patterns in the gym, or like still, you know, playing pickup sports, even if you're not an athlete, like that, doing those things right. as long as you can, will promote a lot of longevity in your body and a lot of enabling ability for people to be active when they're older. And then if you're an athlete listening, Absolutely. It's like, yeah, if you're an athlete listening, you're just training different motor programs and building a resilient body for your own sports.
No, I think it's huge. Like, yeah, I even think there's a side of doing other things. It's almost becomes a therapy. Like for me, I surf a lot. I skate a little bit, like just cruising, I don't do any crazy tricks. You know, when I lived in Kansas, I rode dirt bikes. Like we do all the fun things, and obviously there's risk involved and there's danger, but you can control that amount of danger by where your mind is at and what you know you want to accomplish. And so, you know, when I go surf, if it's massive overhead surf, I'm very careful. Like I know where I'm taking off. I watch out for certain sets that are closing out, because I know like you can get injured pretty quickly doing something like that and ruins your career. But at the same time, you want to be able to have those things that you enjoy and takes you away. And for me, being able to be in the ocean is is a place where I find a lot of peace and calm away from the grind of training, which I think is huge because it gives me that balance and the opportunity to kind of decompress from that world. Because you see a lot of athletes and even business professionals get into this cycle of being so hyper-focused on their job, and it eventually takes the joy and the fun out of what they're doing because their perspective is so warped because they don't have anything outside of it that brings them joy. And so that's one thing I've noticed, especially in 2020 with the weird year that it was, is I was able to step back a bit from the sport and gain a lot of perspective on relationships and things that I can do outside of the sport, but still maintain my seriousness in that kind of cutthroat drive for performance.
Yeah, very well said. You know, essentially you just spoke to the importance of balance. And I think sometimes like people get so caught up needing to do something for work or needing to do something to better themselves, health, fitness wise as an athlete, that it can kind of feel like anything, any time not spent doing that can, you know, almost, at least for me, I've gone through phases where it was like making me anxious. And then it was like, well, no, like almost any time without fail that I like give myself a break and just go relax and play, I
absolutely
can move, you know, it's almost like I recharge my batteries and do a better quality of work when I come back or get a new client or something random happens. It's like, you know, life kind of rewards you for diversifying your interests.
For resting, exactly. That's so good. I love that. And I couldn't really add much to that. It's so interesting because even when I first got into the world of elite sport and stuff too, is you watch the commercials and the advertisements, and it's basically they speak of these athletes as if all they do is eat, breathe, sleep their sport. But if they really did that, and some do, but you see how it destroys them after the career because they don't really have anything to fall back on, and they find their value, and that you can't find your value purely in your sport because I think it will eventually drive you crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, you don't have to do your other passions for a living necessarily, but it is important to still like scratch those itches. And I think, you know, follow your natural curiosity and heart. I think it can provide a lot of longevity for you in whatever else you're doing in this life too, you know?
Absolutely.
Kind of fulfill all parts of your purpose. Now, did I hear you say, right, that you said your mom was a gladiator?
Yeah. So when my parents first got married, they traveled the world for 8 years, and one of their stops, so they just look at postcards and they like, hey, let's go this place. So they backpack and hitchhike and stuff. And when they were in London, they were working and they went to try out for the show to be on the Gladiators just as contestants. But they couldn't compete as contestants because they weren't citizens. And so one of the gladiators apparently, and this is what my mom tells me, is was injured, and they called mom back and were like, hey, we have an injured gladiator. We know you guys can't come back as contestants, but you could be a gladiator on the show. And so she went from cleaning toilets to being world famous and basically beating people up for a living with bodyguards and everything, which is just so funny to me because obviously I never really grew up watching the gladiators or knowing what the show was. And there was a time we were in Florida just like vacationing. And this, I think it was an Irish or like a Scottish family recognized mom at the pool. And this is the first time this had ever happened. They were like, oh my goodness, you're Laser. Oh. And I was like, what in the world is happening? Cause I'm like, I'm used to people coming up to me and be like, hey, you're Michelangelo, right? Like you swim and like we swim and stuff. But when they recognized mom, it was so funny to see. And even too, she was like, what? Like, but yeah, so she was a gladiator way back. And those, like, there's still videos of her out on YouTube. It's so fun to watch.
That's like American Gladiators with like Mike O'Hearn and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Wolf and all those crazy guys.
Oh, man, so what if that's like the, yeah, that seems like a, like it would be really fun, almost like if like rollerball was an actual sport, just one of those, like, oh, you know what I mean?
Incredible. Yeah, like they need to do like a remake and modernize it, make it look super sick.
Oh yeah.
I could see someone doing that.
Yeah, maybe have little like American Gladiator pop-ups out here in LA or something like that. Just give people like an outlet for their stress. Speaking of balance.
Oh, that would be so cool. Yeah, like a combo of American Gladiators, Wipeout, and Ninja Warrior, all just like a mash.
I'd be down. Speaking of circling back a little bit, how's your body feeling coming into this prep?
Yeah, so it's been really interesting. I had COVID in middle of December. And so it was actually a great time to get it for me because I was taking some time off anyway, just to recover after a racing season I had in Budapest. And when we came back into the pool, you know, things were still kind of shut down. We didn't really know what our schedule was going to look like. But over time, we've been very fortunate to have an awesome relationship with the YMCA here. And so they've been giving us all the pool access we need to train and basically partner with us on this kind of journey to the Olympics. And my body feels amazing. So we're in the middle of week four now of just loading and basically putting as much endurance and stuff on the body. And it was really challenging in the beginning. Not that I hadn't lost any like fitness. I had lost a good amount of endurance. So I was still strong and fast, but I couldn't hold it for very long. And now just over these 4 weeks, it's been crazy to see how quickly I've regained that. And I'm excited to see what another 4 weeks will do when we get ready to race in the upcoming season, because, you know, the Olympics are coming up closer and closer, and come trials, we're going to be ready to really dominate. And my body feels amazing. Like I do feel stronger every day, and it's really exciting to see. And a lot of it, I think, comes from just the intentionality of this season. I feel like with so much uncertainty in 2020, coming into the new year, there's been a lot of just really healthy routines set up that have given me a kind of positioned me to just focus purely on training and the things that I need to do and can control to get the most out of my training sessions. And then focusing a lot on recovery and what I eat, you know, enabling all that growth to not be wasted time.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, it sounds like you're really hitting your groove. You know, go
100%
as you ideally peak coming.
Definitely. No, summertime. I'm very excited for where we are. You know, March of 2020 was crazy because I was definitely at prime fitness. I was swimming fastest times in the country and really kind of changing as an athlete. I was starting some more 200 IM, and so a little longer distance than what I used to do, 'cause I'm primarily a sprint athlete. You know, I've always focused on the sprints, but you know, 2020 was the first time we started to add that 200 IM. And, you know, now we're training with a bit more of a focus on that race. And I think it's going to be awesome to see where I can be come trials. You know, we've got some very, very lofty goals, and I think we can definitely achieve them if we stay true and focused on the routines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, And I think that walking that careful line of like pushing yourself enough to progress and then tapering to like peak at the right time and not overload your system. That's always like a fine line that, you know, I'm walking when I'm working with athletes as well.
Absolutely.
Now in that, can you talk to us a little bit about what your training is like?
Yeah, definitely. So our routine right now, I'll kind of give you a roadmap for like what our training week looks like. And then I'll go into more like the specifics of how we train. Because inside our sessions, hey guys, stop. Sorry, the dogs are going crazy.
All good.
inside our sessions, we train with a method called USRPT. So it's ultra short race pace training. And the principle behind the methodology of USRPT is specificity. So whenever we train, we understand that our brain codes all these movements through repetition. And so in order to get an output that you deem desirable, that you want, you have to swim that time, that velocity, that specific stroke pattern constantly so that your brain knows, okay, this is what I need to do on the day. So it's just like coding these movements. And that's what we do, is every session will look the same except for the stroke and possibly the times as they evolve over the weeks. So as you you know, get conditioned, your times get faster, the rest becomes less, and your body adapts to these markers. And then when you come to race, I've noticed, and it's been kind of crazy, is like, I will know going into a meet exactly what times I will swim based on the weeks prior of training, because it's so specific and accurate to the racing, which is really exciting. So just being super specific to racing. And then going back to just what our week looks like is Monday. So right now, Monday, Tuesday, I'll triple. So I swim three times. I'll do 2 hours in the morning, an hour at lunch, an hour at five in the evening. And then, so that's Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, I do another triple, same kind of schedule. Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday are singles. What differs between those days is Wednesday in the morning, it's just 2 hours, but it's a recovery swim. And so we realize, you know, having six training sessions on top of the one gym session we have on Tuesday, you know, there's seven workouts that are very high intensity, heart rate is up, lactic acid is being built, glycogen stores are being depleted. So we use Wednesday as a full-on recovery day. So easy swim, smooth, feel it out. And then the rest of the days, I have freedom to go and surf or hang out at the beach or just sleep at home. and then we go back into Thursday with another big loading day. So we create this breakdown. And you've got a little bit of lingering fatigue that comes from Monday through Wednesday. And then you hit Friday. Friday, we do a single, but we want it to be a big, heavy single. And so we kind of front load that session. We do a lot of 50s at 200 pace, really specific on times. And then Saturday is race prep. And so it's kind of, we call it suited Saturdays. So I'll put a race suit on, dome cap, we'll get on the blocks and we'll do races. And it's basically just a marker for every week. So we can look back and see, okay, how has my body adapted to the fatigue from this week versus last week, and how have I been able to perform better or worse? What kind of things have gone into it? And we document everything because the routine is so like laid out and consistent. I know exactly what I'm eating, when I'm eating. And so you can kind of see these trends, which has been really cool in the training, is then you can look back and see, okay, like this changed. Maybe this is how it affected my body. And outside that, we do three times gym each week, which would be like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So it's a lot of time, a lot of working. It's really interesting how, even though it's been more time in the pool than I'm used to, because pre-COVID, we just would double like three times a week and then single. So I'm still doing the same amount of sets, but I'm spreading it out. And I think what I've noticed is I'm now able to get more quality work out of each set or each session because they're a little shorter, but they're very focused. So when we go in, it's like, you've got an hour, you get in the pool, you go right away and you build and you build and you build. And that's been pretty cool to see, instead of trying to stack all of the work into one giant session. But yeah, that's in a nutshell, like what our week looks like. And then just going back on the training, it's been very revolutionary. So a lot of swim programs and stuff are very traditional based, where it's, you know, you do drills, your long stuff, like this and that. And it's all about destroying the body. But what we notice with mine is we're creating more neural fatigue. So it's like our body reaches a point where there's physical breakdown, but the neural fatigue is enough to create that like aha moment in the brain, so that it knows, okay, like this is the time and this is what I need to be going. So that, like I said earlier, is when you come to race, it just happens naturally.
Interesting. Very interesting. That's actually along the lines of some of that nervous system training that nervous system training, but targeted nervous system training that I was talking about privately with you before we got on the call. And
yeah,
you know, instead of kind of going along the lines of like wham, bam, beat 'em up training, it's like creating that stimulus to kind of really just manage the adaptation. Obviously your lifestyle around that matters too, and we'll get to that in a sec, but
absolutely,
that's really interesting, kind of one of those little synchronicity moments, you know, you and I coming together here.
No, definitely, I agree. And I this is something you'll appreciate too and understand, being so in the system of understanding the neural system, is, you know, when you're training, as much as you train your physical body, I think the most important thing is training your brain and understanding how your brain operates. because I think if you miss that, then all the training you're putting in is actually, I feel like it's not going to be as retained. Really just in a nutshell, your brain is your most powerful muscle and you need to know how it works.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, elite performance comes from is your nervous system. It's not about building the muscles a certain way. There, you do build, you know, fast twitch muscle fiber, you do build the muscles themselves, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit more of a side effect if you're focusing on the nervous system than it is like the end result unto themselves. Whereas I think a lot of common strength and conditioning tends to focus a little bit too much on tradition and optics and not as much on, you know, really kind of taking a look around and saying like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? You know, how much of this is throwing, you know, junk at a wall and hoping it sticks? How much of it is really good? And, you know, where can we innovate? Speaking of that, what does your in-gym session look like before we get into your nutrition?
Yeah. Yeah. So our gym has always been, just like the way we train, very different. We've gone through seasons of dabbling with like lifting heavy weights or Olympic lifting or just mobility and stuff. And we even at one point worked with the trainer out of KU. So she basically would train all these basketball players to jump high, and it's just incredible work she had done. And what I noticed was when I was lifting heavy, it broke me down so much that I wasn't able to train specifically. Mm. And so I realized as much as, you know, being strong is helpful and stuff for swimming, it wasn't something that was needed. I think there's a huge kind of misunderstanding with swimming is that you can generate that power and speed, but you need to maintain efficiency and mobility. And so a lot of what we do in the gym now is more mobility. Occasionally we'll do some Olympic lifts and things, just being a sprinter, like to get that kind of strength power out. But a lot of it's with medicine balls or even just body weight, pull-ups on the ground, like core stability work. We do a lot of core work. But what's really cool too is, you know, we understand that when you're swimming, it's a form of resistance training. So in a way, you know, I'm 200 pounds, so I'm pulling myself through the water for 2 hours doing 90 50s at 200 pace with a 200 pound weight basically. And that creates a lot of power and strength. And that's what it's been kind of so interesting for me is a lot of people doubted us when they said we never lifted weights because from a young age, I've always been kind of skinny, but I was very shredded. I was cut and lean. And that came from the diet, but two, it came from a lot of this just constant at pace, speed, strength, kind of pulling where the body uses the muscles that are needed and it grows them and develops them to best sustain fast swimming. So anything we do in the gym, we try and make it as specific to the swim movements as possible. That's why I think like if I was to do one exercise in the gym for the rest of my life, it would be pull-ups because it's the most specific to swimming butterfly or something. It's like you can visualize that movement. And then when you get into the water, at least it's semi,
transferable.
Like the transferable. Exactly. The adaptation is easy.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I've actually been toying with some chin-up variations recently where, I'll have athletes, kind of almost hyperextend their legs out in front of them a little bit, not quite fully straight out like a gymnast, but like, let's just say elongate them and like point their feet towards themselves as they're hanging. So it's kind of their legs are instead of dangling straight down or tucked behind them, they're kind of at an angle. And then, so you get the fascia actually in the brain you create like a neuromuscular and neuromyofascial situation there where it's not just even an upper body exercise anymore. Cause you're actually getting the brain to activate the back chain, the lower,
right,
back chain of the lower extremities with that. So it's,
that sounds brutal. How many reps would you do that? Like, how would you break that down?
You know, it's actually hard to gauge for people.
Right. Because, like, it's a lot of them, so independent. Yeah.
Yeah. We usually just
for individual,
and it's okay in that case to kind of go to failure. Cause you're not going to like an absolute point of exhaustion.
Right.
For you. It's a mechanical instruction, like a mechanical failure more than it is anything.
Right. That makes sense.
Some people can only get in several reps in the beginning, or a little more. Yeah. But yeah, if you come by the facility sometime, I can always show
you. Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah.
You'll notice it'll be interesting to see because I have such a long torso. So like anything back and like lower abdomen stability it becomes very challenging very quickly.
Oh, that's funny, man. Yeah. I'll send you over when we get off. I'll definitely send you over some videos of some of the,
that'd be great.
Some of the stuff I do with folks, but you know, I actually bring them, speaking of like training in different domains, I'll bring even like court and field sport athletes into the pool and have them do specific nervous system training and biomechanics training in the pool.
That's cool. Yeah.
I'm with you too. I'm not big on having the athletes do, we still lift, but it's more like some of the lifts are like teaching lifts, to get a certain proprioceptive or motor control element in there. It's maybe less than their max, but for the most part, but for more rate of force production and things like that as well. So I've never been a big like barbell back squat kind of guy.
Right. Yeah. And two, I think you increase a lot of like risk for injury and stuff. And it's like, you don't need to put that wear and tear in your body in order to get performance. It's much like what Mike Mensah says, like it takes a bullet to kill you. Like you don't need to be in the gym cranking out these massive weights. It just takes one to break down the muscle and then you got to let it heal. You know, a lot of that growth comes from your recovery, not from the exercise itself.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of recovery, you know, when you see these swimmers, like, I mean, Michael Phelps is the famous example, and like he ate basically a buffet the whole day. Like,
yeah.
What is your nutrition like right now?
Yeah. So right now, it's very basic. I try and eliminate, I mean, in a nutshell, so people would look at my meals and say, I'm very keto. And keto is something that I've loved and we've researched and studied and dabbled with for a few years now. And that's what we love with you guys and real ketones and all the exogenous ketones that you can get is, you know, I come from a sport where they glorify carbs. Obviously, I mean, I feel like all sports kind of glorify carbs still, except for maybe like your long distance runners.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we wanted to see, is there a way that I can kind of dabble with both? But I basically eat a lot of protein, which is a challenge for being keto because, you know, when you break down the muscles, you want to restore and create that muscle, repair. But then I focus a lot on my fats. So a lot of avocados, you know, coconut oils, nuts, fatty things, fatty yogurt, and then trying to avoid as much as possible, like our processed foods, carbohydrates, like high carb fruits. You know, we eat a lot of berries, things like that. And then breakfast is always the same, lots of bacon, avocado, cottage cheese, eggs, and a fat bomb. And so that's kind of the thing is like, we're basically, I'd say keto, I haven't tested in a while. And most of it's just because as much as everything's so calculated and kind of watched over with a fine tooth, like when it comes to food, I understand like I work so much and train so hard that a lot of it's going to be burnt anyway. And which is cool because I can kind of get away with a little more carbohydrates than most.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously the regular human, but even for some athletes, because of the amount of work we do in the pool. And that's been kind of fun to see is like, okay, what's my limit? You know, is it just 100 grams or can I do a little more? And so for lunch, I do pretty much every day tuna and rice with like some mayonnaise or something that's like keto friendly, like a keto mayo and lots of salt. Always drinking
electrolytes.
Electrolytes and then refueling. And even with keto too, it's like it's necessary to have that sodium added. And so sometimes we'll do like bouillon cube drinks or soups. And then for dinners, a lot of the time is, I love my fish. I love like sushi, salmons. And then my dad, he's been for a while now experimenting with like steak diet, just like pure steak. So he skips most breakfasts and eats just steak in the evening. which I could never do. Like, that terrifies me.
Really?
But he's had some really awesome performances with it, and his keto score, like, he's so high. But yeah, I don't think I could ever do that.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you're using so much type 2B ultra fast twitch muscle fiber. I mean, those are better fed
exactly
glycolytically or with carbs. So I think this also is a good takeaway for people listening, is like, I think you can almost wave and weave, and situationally when you do need more carbohydrates, you use them almost like your car. If your car had a different fuel system for the freeway versus around town, right?
Right. And 100%
biasing.
Well, that's a perfect like word picture too. Cause you know, when I'm training, so through a, like, say a few weeks of a training block, I'll be lower carb, like close to keto, pretty much keto fully. And then when I come to race, I can eat a little more carbs, cause I know I'm going to burn myself back into ketosis. And you still get that burst in energy, that spike, but then you want to obviously make sure you're eating foods that aren't going to spike your insulin and create this crash in energy. And that's the tricky part, which really just comes through experimenting. And I think understanding your body and being able to have as little, like, you want to have that routine where there's a little interruption. So things you can kind of calculate and figure, okay, like, how's my body reacting to it? And that's what I love about even the way we train, is it's so repetitive that every week we're doing almost the same sets every session. And so it's like, I can compare constantly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just get, you know, feedback, right? Like, that's what a lot of this tinkering is about, yeah, with your training or nutrition. I even tell people nutrition is information that you're sending into your body. You can kind of tinker with it, but yeah, I mean, I'll have clients of mine, and people at home listening, it's like, when you're using more of your fast twitch muscle fiber, like, those are times where you're going to need a higher level of carbohydrates, and you shouldn't worry about exactly where you're at in ketosis necessarily so much as you are about the bigger picture of, am I getting healthier? Mm-hmm. Am I recovering? Am I getting faster, stronger, yeah, you know, what better body composition, whatever your goal. And then, you know, being maybe a little bit more like fat biased on days of rest and recovery, which for your everyday individual, probably going to be over half the days, right? Like, something more along the lines of a lower, you know, in context, lower carb approach, getting more of those energy systems from fat, which is where, excuse me, energy from fat, or the oxidative energy system, which is what you tend to run on when you're just at rest doing nothing or doing something simple like a biking around town. So,
right. Well, and what's so interesting too about even creating that, like, the, when you speak about oxidative, you know, with the way I train too, it over time, and I've been doing this for over a decade now, but when I was younger, my body basically converted its muscle fibers to become more oxidative. So instead of creating this high lactate, like, acid pooling, and that, actually lactate's a fuel, but it's the acid that pools, and that's what kind of locks your body down, is what I've noticed is, and this is, there's science journals on this somewhere, but because of the way I train, being so repetitive, short rest, short work, I've, over time, my muscles have adapted to become more oxidative. So in theory, I can recover quicker because of the way I've trained. And then also now having, you know, being high fat, keto relatively, it aids that training style and basically creates this ecosystem in my body to where everything just kind of works in unison. It's pretty fascinating.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great to hear, man. And supplement wise, I know we talked privately about you doing exogenous ketones. What's your supplementation like, and where does everything fit in?
Yeah. So we do a bit, for a long time, and still now, I use Superstarch through a company that you can, like, pre-workout. And that was cool because there's a little bit of the way that it's designed, it doesn't spike insulin like a carb would, but you get that energy. And then I use the D+ from Real Ketones as my exogenous ketones. That's like my primary for aiding that keto lifestyle, and then also, you know, that combats any sort of carbohydrates that I maybe have taken over and above what I should be. And And it tastes amazing. Like, I've never really had any exogenous ketones that tasted good. I remember the first time I tried way back, maybe it was like years ago. I was young, didn't really even know what keto was, but someone had us try these ketone sachets and it was like, this is disgusting. Like, whatever it is, I don't want it. And so that's cool. It's like, I have the I think it's the grape you guys have. And then there's like, obviously protein is a big one. Protein, it's between real ketones and UCAN. It's like whatever we have in stock. You know, I eat a lot of protein, but I also try and get as much of it from foods. Right. Because when you train so many times a day, it gets pretty heavy in your stomach to have 4 protein shakes, you know? And then of course we add like our creatine and we do other like pills just to kind of supplement as much as possible. Is like, because I don't eat so many foods and stuff, it's easy to get like your CoQ10, D-ribose, I think citrulline, and there's other just like regular, like vitamin D, vitamin C, like things that your body needs. And if you go overboard, it's just going to become, it'll just get out of you anyway. Like, it's not going to harm you, which is nice to have. You know, fish oil. So those kind of things that just small, but aids that recovery cycle and helps your body just become a healthier vessel overall.
Awesome. Yeah. I know I was in on some of those discussions when we were talking about using designer carbs or performance carbs like UCAN that actually have very specific time release on them. So they don't spike your blood sugar as much all at once and you have fuel for now and later. So right. Those are something that, you know, people listening can experiment with in their own, for their own Absolutely. Workouts, a way to get energy without taxing the adrenal system as well. Pre-workout would. And what have you noticed since you started doing those and exogenous ketones as well? You know, I think most people are pretty familiar with what protein does, for example.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing, and I mean, I can think back to like a training period where we started to increase the length of our sessions. And, you know, I used to just be like very short in the pool, very quick sprint based. So it was like, I didn't need a whole lot of fuel to kind of get through a session. It was easy to just fuel up afterwards. But as we started to increase the endurance, go 75s, like longer paces, harder sessions, I'd get about halfway through a session, I'd be starving. And physically I'd bonk. I'd really hit a point where I almost felt jittery and like you could lose finger in your feeling in your fingers. And so what I noticed now when I've become fat adapted and really fueling off of the ketones in my body is I have this longer lasting energy source where I can, you know, push through the final set and not, instead of like what it used to be, where it's like, I'm just trying to get through this. Now I can like really push through. And that's important too, when it comes to preparing for the 200 IM, which is the main focus now, is like, I can be really quick. I was under world record pace at the 150. In the last 50 meters, I came back in a 30 point when if I just swam a 28, which is a pretty average time, I would have broke the world record. And so, you know, it's one of those things that, okay, in training, like if I can just get that last little bit of adaptation, understanding how do I push through this pain? How do I sustain it? You know, and that comes from fueling and it carries over into racing. So that's been a huge, huge thing for me, is being able to get through sessions and not be starving. And you know, what I notice is as you become fat adapted is you really don't crave unhealthy things, and you don't like, my meal portions aren't massive. And that's one thing that was kind of crazy. It's like, even with I don't think Phelps and Lochte and them were actually eating that much food. I don't know if it was possible. And I also think if they were consistently, they'd be diabetic and their body would just be destroyed. So that'd be kind of interesting to see. It's hard to believe.
You think it was more like maybe a cheat day or something that got kind of.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think it was like a once in a while. And also, you know, with any sort of media outlet, a regular diet doesn't sell papers. It's easy to blow things out of proportion for the sake of a story and an agenda. And so, yeah, but that's just me like speculating. But yeah, no, I definitely, being fat adapted, don't eat massive meals. Like, I know when I'm filled and the energy comes from the fats. So
Right.
it's been fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, good. I always enjoy picking the brain of people just to, as something of a health and performance anthropologist, just to, learn these things. So
No, it's really cool.
let's see. You're also, now if people want to like really learn how you're doing this, who are listening and want a little help integrating it themselves, you mentioned that you're starting something of a training platform for people, right?
Yes. Yeah. So my dad and I, for years, have been speaking about this. And our goal has always been to create an academy where we give everybody the tools that we've kind of acquired over the years. We've been working at this for a decade. We've researched and had communications and relationships with the smartest people in the world. And we want to be able to give that 100% back to anyone that's willing to learn and wants to perform. And so, over the 2020 kind of months of quarantine and time locked away, we spent that time creating a MA Academy, so the Michael Andrew Academy, where we'll go over quite a few things. We've got courses on my training as a swimmer, and then we've got, our gym, nutrition, and then we're going to be working on psychology and the mental performance, the side of things. But where it differs, and what's really exciting for me, is we want to give access to people 100% to us, like a direct line. And so we'll be doing, like, for those that are enrolled in the academy, have access to webinars, live chats, training programs that are tailored by my dad and myself. And so these things where we kind of work alongside athletes and people that want to level up and step up their game to the next position, and really do it kind of easy. Like, it's not as hard as everybody makes it out to be. And it's very simplified. And so we're going to do that. We're going to simplify and give all the tools. And that's what we're kind of doing through our MA Academy. And they can sign up just through swimmermichael.com, for those of you guys that are interested in any of that. Be
Swimmer
like that,
Michael
get that
Bach.
early bird access.
Okay,
Yeah,
that sounds great.
swimmermichael.com.
I mean, and when, you guys are kind of pioneers in your own right for what you're doing. So I think that could be a great way for people to like peek behind the curtain and just sort of see what's going on,
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I remember we spoke about this years ago, and never been able to put it together. But we've got an awesome team that's been helping us work on this, and I'm very excited to start launching it soon. I think it can be a huge game changer, and it's been cool to see how over the years people have come to know our heart for swimming and our heart for the sport and just who we are as people. And initially they didn't understand us and they doubted us and they said all sorts of things about the way we did things. But now they see, over the years we've stuck around and we've stayed true to who we are, and the performance speaks for itself. And so we're excited to give it all back and help others become successful.
Well, I think too, the more people see like your intentions and where you're coming from, and the fact that you're just looking, you're in search of best practice. And then, even if it's different than the norm, I don't think anybody should fault another for doing that, especially if they're just trying to do the best they can with what they have to try to figure things out,
Absolutely.
and in many
Absolutely.
ways, we're all just doing the best we can with what we have. Well, hey, listen, Michael, I really
Yeah.
appreciate you coming on. Maybe we could do another interview in the future, perhaps sometime after the games when you're less busy and, catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to have you on.
That'd be great. Thanks so much for having me. Always enjoy speaking.
Of course, yeah. And if you were to leave people at home with, that are listening with one thing related to, so we really got into training there. How about nutrition? What's one thing with nutrition that you would leave people with? Could be general, could be specific, whatever you want.
One thing with nutrition. I think if you're to do one thing when it comes to your nutrition, it would be, well, this is kind of two things. Cut out as much as possible all the sugars. So any sort of like sugary fruit or even candies, like just processed sugars, cut it out. And then also cut out anything that's like very genetically modified, like breads and cereals and things like that. Like that's a really good starting point, and you'll see huge gains just from that. But it takes time and it's hard, because your body's so used to those cravings. But I think if you can cut those out and really just eliminate it from the household, eventually you will forget about it and you'll replace it with other healthy, yummy foods that, you know, can give you the fuel and energy that you actually need.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, very well said. I've noticed too that since I've cut out, you know, at least all regular consumption of table sugar and, you know, pretty much all of, for the most part, other than occasional little dark chocolate, and just mainly stuck to the sugars that I naturally get through fruit, I've just felt the, you know, heck of a lot better, honestly.
Definitely. That's so good.
Anyways, thanks again for coming on. Everybody at home, thank you so much once again for inviting us in your homes. We really appreciate it and looking forward to seeing you guys here next time at BHB Radio.